Willkommen zum New Work Chat Podcast von meinem Vater.
Heute mit Richard von der Blum. Viel Spaß!
I'm a huge fan of AI, don't get me wrong. I'm a huge fan because I think in order to brainstorm, in order to help you write, in order to give you a different perspective on content, it can be very helpful. And I'm using AI. I think it's the way how we use it that makes a difference. And I'm never, ever, ever going to let AI write my post and publish it on LinkedIn, because that's something that comes from me. In order to stay authentic, in order to engage with my network, that part needs to be about me.
Damit moin und schöne Grüße aus Rostock City. Herzlich willkommen zurück zum New Work Chat, dem Podcast für die neue Arbeitswelt. Mein Name ist Gabriel Rath und ich freue mich riesig, dass Richard von der Blum heute bei mir ist. Er ist der führende LinkedIn-Experte, internationaler Keynote-Speaker und wird uns heute aus seiner exklusiven Algorithmus-Studie die größten Geheimnisse verraten. Zur Plattform der Stunde, denn ich glaube, wir alle nutzen LinkedIn. Ich nutze es natürlich auch, um die Geschichten zu diesem Podcast zu erzählen. Und viele Gäste und Gästinnen sind auch über LinkedIn überhaupt in den Podcast gekommen. Also große Chancen, aber natürlich auch viele Dinge, die zu beachten sind. Die Frage ist, was ist jetzt mit künstlicher Intelligenz? Nimmt sie uns die Arbeit ab oder wie können wir ganz neu damit arbeiten? Die Frage ist, wie bleiben wir glaubwürdig? Und all diese Fragen kann Richard uns beantworten, denn er kennt sich bestens damit aus. Mehr als 200.000 Menschen folgen ihm international. Freue mich riesig, dass er heute da ist. Das Gespräch haben wir auf Englisch aufgezeichnet. Richard lebt in Spanien, kommt ursprünglich aus Holland. Und ich habe mich so gut es geht eingegroovt. Wünsche euch viel Spaß und gute Unterhaltung. So, lucky to be back on the New Work Chat Podcast. I'm very happy that Richard is here. Hi, Richard from Rostock, Germany.
Hi, Gabriel. Nice to meet you. Thanks for inviting me on the podcast.
So you are in Spain right now, right?
Yeah, I'm originally from the southern part of Holland, Maastricht, which is about half an hour drive from Aachen. But I moved to Spain early 2018, just when you started your podcast.
Just to escape the cold temperatures we have to suffer here.
That was one of the main reasons, yeah, definitely.
So I'm doing this podcast because I'm interested in people, interested in how they found their way and their passion. And you're somebody who talks a lot about work. And that's interesting because a lot of the people I know in my family, the colleagues and people I meet on the street, they don't talk so much about their work. Maybe they don't even like their work. So am I right to think that you, I don't know if you love your work, but you seem to have a big passion for it?
I think everyone who has the privilege to look at his or her work almost from a hobby perspective is very lucky. And I think 90% of the time, I feel that I can do what I like to do, where I can add value to my network, where people are willing to pay me for. So I'm almost talking about Ikigai, you know? Probably you know Ikigai. Mm-hmm. Like, yes. What are you good at? What does the world need? Where are people willing to pay for? And where do you get energy from? For me, that's what I'm doing now. You know, that's I've been doing this since 2009. I'm very active on LinkedIn. I share my knowledge with entrepreneurs, LinkedIn market or marketing people, salespeople. And one of the greatest things of my work is that I get so many positive feedback, so many people that benefit from the insights and that let me know how they benefited from it, how it made their life easier, how they grow their business because of the insights. So I think one of the most important things for me, at least, about work is that you feel that you are using your strengths and that you make a difference. I think that's one of the most important parts. And yeah, for me, that's the case.
You know, I'm a father of three daughters. And My 11-year-old daughter, Matilda, she helps me with this podcast. She introduces the guests. She's responsible for the intro. So the first question I have for every guest is, how would you explain to Matilda, 11 years old, what you do?
Wow, that's a very, it's amazing that your daughter helps you. It's also a very fun question. I help people reach their potential clients via the online world, via social networks, preferably LinkedIn, to earn more money. That's basically it. I help people to earn more money in a good way where they feel that they can be themselves and they don't need to play a role.
So my wife, she just came home with Matilda and our youngest. And what they are telling me is, Daddy, you're just sitting in front of the laptop, the smartphone. What's the good thing about your job? So what would you tell them? What's the cool thing about your job?
Well, I think they're right. You know, again, I love my job. My job involves that I'm behind my laptop 4 or 5 hours a day. But nothing beats real-time contact. I mean, I love to go to events. I love to meet people. I love to go out with friends. So for me, I think the social contacts in the real world are very important. But you know, we are living in a digital world, and if you look at my job or my target audience, those are people who need to sell or market their products or services across the Netherlands, across Germany, across Europe, maybe even overseas. And you know, it's impossible to have lunch with someone in Washington today and to do dinner tomorrow with someone in Singapore. So I rather learn people, and I do this myself, how to meet their potential clients, although they're on the other side of the world, to make the offline encounter more successful. Because I sold a lot of my training programs, a lot of my services completely online, mm-hmm. but I really prefer to have like one meeting at least physical and to be in the same room, and because it's a different dynamic. So I think they're right. You know, it can be very boring. It can be very lonely behind your computer, but it's still communicating. I'm still working with my network.
So maybe we just dive into your story. You're from the Netherlands. I know Groningen in the northern part. We were there with our parents in my childhood, a lot of summers, and of course Amsterdam. How was it growing up in the Netherlands, and how did you find out what you want to do?
Yeah, well, how was it to grow up in the Netherlands? You know, I think I never wondered myself, why do I grow up in the Netherlands? I mean, it's a given fact that you are born. I was born in Maastricht, by the way, which is, it couldn't be farther from Groningen. I mean, mm-hmm. Groningen is the most northern city, and Maastricht is the most southern city. And we are not a big country, but it still is a 3-hour plus drive. For me, it was a very protected area. I mean, you have the big cities in Holland like Amsterdam, Rotterdam. I think life can be tougher there. I mean, Maastricht is really it's like a little village, so everybody knows each other. I think also life is more influenced by the French way of living. It's more relaxed than the majority of the Netherlands. So for me, it was very protected. I love the region. I was there last week. It's the only region of the Netherlands that has, we don't have mountains, but at least we have hills. So it's not as boring as the rest of the Netherlands. No, I really liked it. And when I go back to the Netherlands, it's always a good feeling to be back in my home region.
Because here in Germany, we are talking very positive about the Netherlands because it's very family friendly. You know, in Germany, it's not always the case. When we drive to Denmark or Sweden, it's the same. That's our impression.
I don't know. I don't know, to be honest, Gabriel, because I've been to a lot of places in Germany, and I, from my perception, it really differs where you are. Yes. I mean, I was in Berlin a few months ago, a few days. When I was younger, I went a lot to the Schwarzwald, Freiburg, mm-hmm. And that's a complete different ambience. People are completely different. But if I compare that to, for example, Aachen or München, again, it's completely different. So I think behavior and how we respond and how we treat other people doesn't stop at the borders. It's something that is influenced by the region and by the habits of that region.
Yes.
For example, I think people in Aachen are much more like people in Maastricht. I don't see a big difference, even though Maastricht is the Netherlands and Aachen is Germany. But for example, Maastricht and Amsterdam, it's a complete opposite. Or Aachen and Berlin, it's a complete opposite. That's my take on it.
Mm. So when you were in school, did you know what you want to become?
Yeah, professional football player. I was very clear about that. I did manage.
We have a special relationship to the soccer team of your country.
Yeah, no. I didn't come close. So I kept that dream alive until I was 16, 17, and then I realized there were so many players better than me that I should probably give up. And then I came into this vacuum of not knowing what to do.
Yes.
I liked geography. So I looked to study geography, but there was not really a lot of jobs in that specific area that I wanted to study. And then basically two friends of mine, they chose to study economics. And I just followed them because I thought, well, at least, you know, doing the breaks and doing the sports, we are together. So I literally followed two of my best friends studying economics because I didn't have a clue. I mean, I was just 18. I didn't know.
So I think it's about making experiences, maybe finding out what's not the good or the real thing and then experimenting. My first contact with social networks was MySpace 2004. We were doing a lot of music, rapping and hip hop and so on. So everybody could write a little blog on MySpace and upload some music. What were your first experiences with social media?
That's actually a very good question. I think it must be Hives.
Uh-huh.
And Hives was a local social network in the Netherlands. That was very popular in the Netherlands back in 2005, 2006, just when Facebook also started.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually people left Hives and they all joined Facebook because obviously like it has no borders. But I think it must be Hives. I've never been very active on social networks. And every time I tell that to people because of my job, people look at me like, nah, this can be true, but I haven't been very active. I wasn't active on Hives. I think in 20 years, if I have published 40 posts on Facebook, it's a lot. I mean, I publish very rare, once or twice a year on Facebook. There was a time that I was active on Twitter, now called X, but you know, I got bored by that. So the only platform that I signed up for in 2005 and still use is LinkedIn.
Hmm. So what was it like back then?
You mean LinkedIn mm-hmm. in 2005? Yes. Oh, it was very boring. It was very boring. It was like a digital Rolodex. You know what I mean? It was just like people had a profile. Back then you didn't have any updates, so people were not making posts. It was not possible. You just had your profile with your curriculum vitae and you could find other people and connect with them. That was it, basically. And then I think it was 2 years later when they started to let you write little updates. You know, you could have like 3-4 sentences and a picture or something like that. The same time they introduced company pages. A year later, LinkedIn groups came and then it became more like interactive. But mm-hmm. like I remember when I signed up and I invited some people, some colleagues, some friends, and they all came back to me like, what is this shitty site you're inviting me? It's like a spam site or we don't know what to do. We don't see the added value. And I actually didn't know either. I just was there and I thought like, hey, this could be nice. Mm. But it was nowhere close to what it is today.
Mm. Because as you know, in Germany, we have Xing. And yep. like just some years ago, most people were there. And then suddenly LinkedIn appeared and people were like moving. And now it's like the main choice to be on LinkedIn. And because it's a content platform and you can really talk about things, And what you do is talking about LinkedIn. You help others to be successful on LinkedIn. How do you feel about it today after all these years?
I still like it a lot. I think I'm still very grateful for the opportunities it has offered to me, like to a lot of other people. I mean, if it wasn't for LinkedIn, I would not be invited to speak on events in Buenos Aires or in Washington or in Singapore. I mean, LinkedIn literally made it possible for me to travel the world, to earn a living, to work from home. So, you know, I have a lot to thank on the platform LinkedIn. At the same time, I worry a bit because somehow I feel it's like it's my platform. Mm-hmm. And the last 1.5 years, I've seen some changes that I don't believe are for the best. I mean, I receive so much spam nowadays from people trying to sell. There's a lot of phishing going on. So a lot of fake accounts now coming to LinkedIn. There is a lot of AI content that I don't care about. I mean, I want to know what Gabriel has to say. I don't want to know what your robot has to say. And I think that LinkedIn chasing, obviously, more money also has an impact on how members behave on the platform and how we use the platform as a community. And that, I think, I don't like to like have the famous sentence like in the past everything was better, but I think 2-3 years ago, LinkedIn indeed was better than it is now. And I worry, you know, where this will lead to. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are talking about building a personal brand.
Yeah.
How did you develop your brand?
Well, developing your brand is not something that you can do on a Monday, then on a Tuesday you have a brand. I mean, I know, you know, I give trainings in how to create a personal brand on LinkedIn, but it's more like how to start, what to do. And I think it's the consistency in what you do that eventually will lead to a specific type of personal brand. When creating a personal brand, I think it's important that you connect with your target audience, okay? Because I can position myself as a keynote speaker, for example, but if I create my brand on LinkedIn without showing how I am on stage, without providing social proof on where I have spoken, which events I was on the speakers list, then it doesn't resonate with your target audience. So it's very important that you think, I always say you need to think outside in. So what are my clients looking for? Do I have that? And how can I translate that via my profile to make the match with what my clients are looking for? That's very important. And it involves using authentic visuals. It involves good copywriting, but it also involves being active because building a brand is not something you can do passively. It's not creating a profile on LinkedIn, tick the box, and then say, okay, now I'm going to rest and see what happens, because you need to be out there producing content, engaging with your network. That's also part of the brand building.
And then it's about the algorithm. Everybody's talking about it, trying to figure out what are they doing there at LinkedIn. I talked to Selina Gabbard from the Munich marketing team of LinkedIn, and she said, okay, everybody's trying to figure out how we develop it, so we continue developing it. But you are somebody who knows a lot about it. So you have this report. Would you tell us to deal with the algorithm? Because we don't want to be slaves. Yes, we just want to tell our stories at the end of the day.
No, exactly. Exactly. So it was never my intention to write something like an algorithm report and then to force people to adapt their style to the algorithm report, because like Selina from LinkedIn Mutant said, LinkedIn changes the algorithm like very frequently. So you adapt your whole content style and then half a year later, you know, nothing flies because they have switched the algorithm. On the other hand, it's not that LinkedIn radically changes its algorithm. It's not that, for example, document posts perform very well now and next year they're like zero. That's not possible. It's not to understand exactly the facts but it's to get the bigger picture. Like, what is the behavior that LinkedIn favors? For example, a lot of people, because of time, they post and ghost, which means they write a post, they publish it, and they leave LinkedIn, okay? Because they don't have the time to spend all day on LinkedIn. That's what they say, and I totally get it. But if you know that LinkedIn and also other social media platforms give less reach if you are not engaging yourself, then it might be worthwhile to spend 10 minutes more on LinkedIn, helping your own post grow and reaching more of your target audience with the same post than before. So it's not about, is a text post 4 times better or 3 times better, because that can change. But you need to see the bigger picture, okay? What is the behavior that LinkedIn favors? And also, and that's also included in our report, what is the audience behavior, okay? Because an algorithm responds to human behavior, okay? That's what it does. It's not the other way around. It's not that the algorithm is there and doing something with the post without us interfering. We respond. We like posts, okay? Or we comment posts.
That's what people write. Oh, I have to post a selfie because the algorithm demands it. But that's not true.
No, even worse. That's bullshit. Because if I publish a selfie and then I share a white paper about the latest trends in sustainability, it doesn't make sense. There is no connection between the selfie and the content. But if I'm visiting Berlin for an event and I publish a selfie being on stage in Berlin during the event, then the selfie is a relevant part of my story, okay? So the selfie, as an example, it needs to be relevant to the post. So people saying, I saw the algorithm report and says selfies are good, so I'm going to publish a selfie in each post, it doesn't make sense. And even your audience, they will also, after 3 posts, they will be there like, hey, okay, we've seen you now, okay? So, and there are so many examples of that. People that are actually counting lines, okay? Because the best post is 10 to 12 lines. Forget about it. Just make sure your content is relevant. Just make sure that you engage with your audience. That's way more important than any rules of the algorithm.
So maybe we can look into your routine. Do you have something like a routine, or is every day different?
No. I need to have a routine, because if not, I'm going crazy. No, I have a routine. that is if I'm not traveling. If I'm traveling, I make some changes. But on a regular week where I'm not traveling for work, I write my posts most of the time in the afternoon, early evening. I don't publish, but I write them. Next day.
Where do you write them?
Yes, I use Author.up. Mm-hmm. So I use Author.up because there I can save my draft. I have an overview of my drafts. So that's the place where I have all my posts. Sometimes I need to have a visual, or I need to have a carousel designed, which is somebody doing from my team. But I know in the afternoon, early evening, for example, now I know what I will post tomorrow morning, because my posting time is always around 9 in the morning. Okay, 9 in the morning, that's my fixed time slot. Then I publish. I stay around for 10 to 15 minutes to engage with some of my favorite creators, some of my clients, you know, because again, if you engage yourself, you also get more reach. And then I'm going to do other things. Then around noon, between 12 and 1, I come back to LinkedIn. I check my notifications. I check the comments on my post. I respond to those comments. And that is something that I do also at the end of the day, somewhere between 5 and 7. I check new comments on my post. I check my notifications, messages. And then I start to write my new post or select my new post for the next day. So it's posting in the morning, engaging and checking all kind of notification messages around 12, 1 o'clock, and doing the same at 5, 6, 7 o'clock. In total, without writing the content, but to maintain this routine, it's about 30 to 40 minutes a day. And some people believe that I'm on LinkedIn for 5-6 hours, which is absolutely not true.
But people from all over the world are following you. More than 200,000 people are following you. So why at 9 o'clock? Because it's your morning.
Yes, because it's, because, you know, if I would have a German audience, for example, I would still publish in the morning. in Germany, because that means that, you know, people from Germany can respond to the content in a complete day. If you have a global audience, it doesn't matter that much, because if I would publish, for example, in the evening, then this would be morning or afternoon in the US, okay? And then people would engage there.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But preferably I do it in the morning because Europe is my main target audience, and that means that they have a complete day to respond, to engage, to comment, to repost, or whatever they want to do with my content.
So one last question. What do you think about the development of AI and LinkedIn? Do you think AI will change the way we use LinkedIn?
It already did. You know, it already did, because I think on average now around 30% of comments on my post are clearly written by AI, okay? Because a lot of people have said you need to comment as much as possible. Time is an important asset. So a lot of people have turned to comment AI tools, create a list of people you want to comment on, and you know, it's just your bot commenting. And I can really, really see that. I know when somebody's commenting via AI tools. So it already changed how people are using LinkedIn. And also there is, you know, some people just let AI write their posts,
yes,
and without editing, publishing them on LinkedIn. So I see a lot of generic content, a lot of copy-paste content that is clearly written by AI. I'm a huge fan of AI, don't get me wrong. I'm a huge fan because I think in order to brainstorm, in order to help you write, in order to give you a different perspective on content, it can be very helpful, and I'm using AI. I think it's the way how we use it that makes a difference. And I'm never, ever, ever going to let AI write my post and publish it on LinkedIn, because that's something that comes from me. In order to stay authentic, in order to engage with my network, that part needs to be about me. But grammar control, style control, rewriting an old post that I want to reuse, I use AI for those kind of things.
Yeah, thank you very much for these insights into your work. Richard, maybe one last thing you want to share with the audience here in the podcast.
Yeah, so first of all, thank you for having me. I really love the discussion, because the questions were not the questions I normally get, because everybody wants that to dive directly into the algorithm and LinkedIn. So thank you for that. No, I think that the best advice that I would like to share with you and your listeners, I think it's an open door, is to stay authentic. Just stay real, because I think that's where we connect with other people. That's the building block of good communication and good networking, is that you stay true to yourself and you write authentic, you connect authentic with people, and you act authentic. That's my best advice.
Thank you very much, Richard. See you on LinkedIn. We're putting everything in the show notes, and maybe see you in Germany.
Yep. Thank you, Gabriel. Thank you for having me. Cheers.
Cheers.
Damit sind wir schon am Ende der heutigen Episode. Checkt auf jeden Fall mal alle Links in den Shownotes. Dabei packe ich euch auch noch den Algorithmus-Report von Richard mit rein und selbstverständlich auch alle Links zu meinen Geschichten, zu meiner Website gabrielrath.com und zu unserer Social Crowdfunding-Aktion, den Eisbademeisters. Ihr habt es bestimmt schon mitbekommen, wir gehen den ganzen Winter über Eisbaden in der Ostsee, die hat mittlerweile nur noch 6, 7 Grad und wird dann auch langsam richtig interessant im Januar, Februar, dann geht das runter bis 1, 2 Grad. Warum machen wir das? Erstens macht es uns Spaß, also das mag man nicht glauben, aber wir sind richtig happy, wenn wir da rauskommen. Zweitens tun wir damit was Gutes. Wir sammeln Spenden für wohltätige und soziale Zwecke. Aktuell ist unser Crowdfunding-Ziel 7.000 Euro. Die wollen wir sammeln bis 20. Dezember und ihr könnt uns helfen. Es geht nämlich darum, dass wir den Verein Rostocker 7 unterstützen wollen, und von dem Geld möchte der Verein Weihnachtsgeschenke kaufen für Kinder aus finanziell schwachen Familien. Das Thema Kinderarmut wird immer größer. Mich als Vater beschäftigt das sehr. Ich würde gerne einen Beitrag leisten. Und es wäre toll, wenn ihr mir helft, wenn ihr uns helft, besser gesagt, die Eisbademeisters in Rostock, jeden Freitag 15.30 Uhr am Strand von Warnemünde, Turm 3 beim Hotel Neptun einfach runtergehen. Wenn ihr mal in der Nähe seid, kommt auf jeden Fall vorbei. Ansonsten könnt ihr auch überall bei euch in der Nähe Eisbaden gehen. Es gibt die Eisbademeisters mittlerweile auch in Hamburg, in Münster, in der Mecklenburgischen Seenplatte, also in ganz, ganz vielen Städten. Alle News und Infos auf eisbademeisters.de. So viel nochmal zu unserer Aktion. Wenn ihr wollt und könnt, dann spendet bitte auf unserer Webseite 99funken.de/forthekids mit 4, for the kids. Das packe ich euch auch nochmal in die Shownotes. Würde mich riesig freuen, wenn ihr unsere Spendenaktionen unterstützt. Ansonsten danke ich euch fürs Zuhören mit dieser besonderen Folge heute. Wenn es euch gefallen hat, dann bewertet diesen Podcast bitte mit 5 Sternen. Geht jetzt in eure Podcast-App und erledigt diesen kleinen Job. Es hilft ungemein, denn wir wollen diesen Podcast im nächsten Jahr noch viel, viel größer aufziehen. Vielen Dank. Lasst von euch hören. Schreibt mir mal eine Nachricht über LinkedIn zum Beispiel. Wir haben ja heute viel drüber gesprochen. Ansonsten erstmal schöne Grüße. Wir hören uns am Freitag schon wieder. Bleibt gesund und bleibt connected.